Test, test, test 1, 2.
Only mode.
Well, good morning, everybody. I know that many of us had late nights last night, but obviously the work of the Board of Public Works continues with the highest voter turnout in more than 100 years. We have been reminded that America is the greatest democracy the world has ever seen. But democracy requires that we each be responsible. We cast the votes, we count the votes, and we respect the results. And we have to remember that the world is watching. And what happens in the coming days and weeks will define America for decades to come. I know that emotions are running high. But we have to be patient, keep faith in the American voters and our democracy. On January 20th, we will swear in a president. And when we do, we should all stand ready to work with him together. It's my sincere and urgent hope that regardless of the outcome, our leaders in Washington will finally work across the aisle and reach a bipartisan compromise on much-needed federal relief for state and local governments, small businesses, and struggling families that have been severely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. I also want to take a moment this morning to congratulate the people of Maryland for making their voices heard. All told, more than 2.8 million Marylanders cast their votes, which represents about 68% of our state's registered voters. And while the state and local election boards did have a few glitches, overall, they performed very well under very trying circumstances. And I want to thank everyone who volunteered to serve as election judges. I want to thank the Maryland Department of Health for assigning health ambassadors to polling places throughout the state to help keep voters and poll workers protected from COVID-19. And finally, I want to thank our federal, state, and local law enforcement officers for working together with us to help ensure the integrity of this election here in Maryland. And with that, I want to welcome my colleagues and turn it over to them for any opening comments. And we'll start with you, Madam Treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. I echo your words completely, starting with a congratulations, as I'm sure the comptroller does, to the board, not just our state board of elections, but to the local boards and the local voters who took advantage both of the early voting, of the mail-in voting, of the in-person election day voting, and by and large all went smoothly and well. It didn't reach the 80% turnout that some people had set as a goal, but it was a very, very good turnout, an excellent turnout. And I'm very pleased that my grandchildren and all of us could see the way elections should run. We're still holding our breath, of course, about the national election, and I know some of us are pleased with some results and not pleased with others, and we just have to wait and see. But I trust things will continue to go smoothly. I certainly hope they will continue to go smoothly. And I do think, Governor, that while we may not be in the same party and both feel pretty strongly about our parties, I think we can agree that a calm, thoughtful election, as inclusive as possible, should be everyone's goal, and I think we seem to be meeting that goal today. And I just hope folks in the White House understand that too.
Well, thank you, Madam Treasurer. Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and thank you, Madam Treasurer. I associate myself with all of the remarks you've just made. Obviously, like millions of other Marylanders and Americans, we're all sitting around waiting anxiously for the results of the crucial presidential election, but also the U.S. Senate races that are going around the country. And I think, Governor, when you mentioned the need for a second stimulus and bipartisanship, obviously something is broken down there in Washington. And hopefully the result, once all the votes are counted, hopefully we'll have a better bipartisan
bipartisan working relationship in Washington that can get the relief that we need. I happen to think that when all the votes are counted, even though I'm deeply disappointed that former Vice President Biden and Senator Harris did not get a crystal clear mandate right at the beginning, the get-go, where we're having to wait for the votes to be counted, the mail-in votes, I am very confident that when all the votes are counted, I think Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will emerge as the victors of this historic election. I'm hopeful, frankly, not for partisan purposes, but just for ability to get things done, that the U.S. Senate is Democratic also. But we have to wait. We have to wait, be patient, as both of you noted.
Many of us are really, really good patients.
Well, that's true. The reason I like the Biden-Harris administration, I think it's going to mark the beginning of a long process of healing. And the governor referred to this, and he's obviously been a national leader on the idea that we need to bridge the divide that has widened so much between Americans on this, unfortunately, along partisan lines. What I really loved about Joe Biden was that during the campaign, he emphasized that he was running, obviously, as the Democratic candidate for president, and that he did not like Donald Trump. But he always said that he was going to govern, should he win, which I believe he will. He was going to govern not as a Democratic president, but as an American president. And frankly, I think we need a lot more of that in Maryland. Yesterday, we had about 1.3 million Biden voters in the state, and including myself, and I'm sure the treasurer. But we also had 731,000 Trump voters. And it's obvious that even Maryland is a state and a country is deeply divided. And I just can't see us as a country being successful if we continue with the current trajectory that we're in. We're really at some kind of an inflection point right now, and many of us need to come together and help rebuild the communities that have been damaged by the toxic state of politics today. And I don't have clean hands, but I'm going to get better. I promise you that. And something that helped me a lot was an article in the Sunday Washington Post by Donna Britt, B-R-I-T-T, who wrote an incredible piece. I encourage everybody to read it. She talks about the need for all of us in politics to forgive one another as a necessary first step for us to move forward as a nation and as a people. And she speaks about forgiveness more in the terms of Martin Luther King, who said that hatred is a poison. And when we express hatred of the other side, we're actually hurting ourselves because the poison of hate is in us. And I don't mean to get all warm and fuzzy here, but I thought that message, and I can't stress it enough, is one of the most urgent and pressing challenges that we have. We need to unite the country because we can't go on with this divisive, dark events occurring. And obviously the governor is a Republican, Governor Hogan, and I'm a Democrat, comptroller, treasurer's Democrat. But we're a Maryland governor and a Maryland comptroller and a Maryland treasurer. And I often say to the staff, there's no such thing as a Democratic tax return or a Republican tax return. They're just Maryland tax returns. So on that note of need for forgiveness and taking it easy on ourselves, I would like to go to a slightly lighter note, which is that I promised the State Board of Elections, particularly Linda Lamone, whose resignation I mistakenly called for, I guess, a while ago, and Deputy Administrator Nikki Charlson, I said if they and the local boards could show a diligent and dedicated, successful election against my skepticism, which has obviously been demonstrated because we've had a very smooth election with some obviously small little hiccups. But anyway, I promised on September 23rd that I would deliver if I was was wrong and everything went well, a few well-earned six-packs of Maryland craft beer later this week as a small token of my gratitude. And I happen to have one of them from Evo down on the shore, which is a fabulous local brewery that I'm taking along with a few other local craft beers. I see that we have Country Pride Ale also, made in Maryland with Maryland employees. Money stays in Maryland, and this really, really delicious, wonderful craft beer, and I will be delivering that to Linda Lamone with my apologies or my congratulations.
Congratulations. Celebration.
Celebration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Hopefully they won't start drinking the beer until all the provisional ballots are finished being counted.
Governor, could we also take the moment to congratulate the apparent victory of the new mayor of Baltimore, mayor-elect of Baltimore? Mr. Scott, we welcome you to the executive branch of our city.
Yeah, thank you. I reached out to him last night to congratulate him, and I'm looking forward to sitting down with him and talking about what we can do to continue to work with the city of Baltimore. Thank you very much. I guess we can go ahead and get started with the Secretary's agenda.
Hi, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. There are 13 items on the Secretary's agenda and 3 reports of emergency procurement. I'm happy to assist with answering any questions.
Questions?
I have a question, Governor, of the Department of Housing and Community Development about their projects.
Jan Bryce and Tara Bacote available to answer questions.
Thank you. This is just in general. First of all, I thank you very much for pointing out now in most of your items the great energy savings and environmental savings aspects of each of your projects. I would put you even farther, however. It's good that we are using Energy Star appliances. It's good that we're doing all that we are doing. A question is, how is what you are doing helping us reach the goals of the Greenhouse Gas Act specifically? And this is a question I'd be asking of most agencies. We do have a goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2030, actually may turn into 50% by 2030. And in order to do that, people really have to focus on how that impacts what they do from day to day in their projects. So I would just ask DHCD, since you're a leader and we're a leader in itemizing these things from the beginning, to be a leader in focusing, again, particularly on greenhouse gas emissions, or I suppose adaptation aspects in the projects that you are building, which will be lasting for decades. So thank you. Let the word go forth, or something like that.
Governor, if I could, I just wanted to, if that's appropriate, just there are 2 items that I wanted to bring to the board's attention. Number one is item 10. Which is an $85 million loan to the Washington Suburban Sanitary Commission that's going to support the construction of bioenergy facilities at their Piscataway Wastewater Treatment in Prince George's County. Apparently, we're going to be utilizing innovative and green technologies. The project's going to reduce the amount of biosolids remaining from the treatment process. I understand that they are significantly cleaner and easier to dispose of, as well as produce methane gas that will be recycled to help run the Piscataway Water Resource Recovery Facility. The new process will not only reduce operating costs, resulting in $3 million in annual savings for WSSC customers, but also cut the WSSC water's greenhouse gas emissions by 15%. Obviously, we all think this is a fantastic project and certainly money that is going to be well spent. And I think the prospect that obviously we like to benefit as taxpayers, but it's also going to benefit Mother Earth. And I just wanted to not a step on the treasurer's favorite topic, but you know, I guess I'll ask a question if someone's here. Is this something? Is this going to produce a product that one can buy in a garden supply store?
Secretary Grumbles, are you able to answer that question?
Yes, I am. And the answer is we certainly hope so. We are so excited about this major, major investment in the beneficial reuse of biosolids. So we do believe there's a market for that, as well as a national example of reducing greenhouse gas emissions through this the Piscataway project. It's really important. Thank you for asking about that. It's consistent with the governor's theme of sustainable materials management, beneficial reuse. So we're excited about the future uses of that product.
Let me recommend an example of that. I, for years, have been using a low-level nitrogen fertilizer on my lawn. It's called Milibronite. Turns out it comes from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin sewage treatment facility. Why do I bring this up? It is a cult product. You can never find it anywhere. It's sold out all the time. Not for the nitrogen, but it has some kind of, deer are allergic to it. So all of the deer in Tacoma Park that eat all of the flowers that I try to grow have been somewhat deterred by this Milagronite, it's called. But I swear to God, the thing just flies off the shelves. And if you could get a better term than Milagronite and come up with something, I think it might be an interesting product.
Their marketing is key. BioGrow, there are a lot of different names for these products other than Milagronite, and we're eager to lead on that front. Thank you.
I think that's terrific. And then, Governor, just very quickly, you gave a $2 million grant.
Could I, Peter, just point out one thing to the governor and about that one? About 10. First of all, it's going to save the WSSC customers over time several million dollars. So, I mean, this is a great example of doing good and doing well. But, you know, the chairman of the WSSC this year is former state senator Howard Dennis.
I didn't know that.
And his predecessor from Montgomery County was former Secretary of Budget Eloise Foster, which, Governor, shows you what good bipartisan leadership can do. Well, I congratulate you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Maybe you can have a dump truck go over to the comptroller's house and dump some of that stuff in his front yard.
Valuable product. Yes, sir. We're on it.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. The vote is 3-0. Move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Hi, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 6 items on our real property agenda today for which we are seeking approval, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions you may have.
Hey, good morning, Madam Secretary. Any questions on DNR?
No, I just want to comment how important parks and recreation are right now. People are just stir-crazy, and the fact that you've got, you know, them open and they're well-attended and safe for people to go to, it's much needed in this time of stress. Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Thank you very much. Our staff has been working very hard.
Are we making any special or different plans as winter comes to maintain the ability for people to get outside and when weather is decent?
So the great news is that we have a lot of outdoor recreation opportunities in the state of Maryland that are year-round opportunities, and many of our state parks, particularly in Western Maryland, feature options like cross-country skiing and, you know, different snow sports that you can engage in. So we like to remind people that while summer might be their favorite time to go or fall, you can really visit our parks year-round and find something great to do.
I think we should make a special push because people can get stir-crazy. I mean, if they're just in the house all winter, and just let people know. There are an awful lot of people there out there who still don't know all the wonderful opportunities that they have, and it would be a great campaign.
Yeah,
that's
a
great
suggestion. Yeah, obviously, outside is much safer than inside. I know that the Lieutenant Governor's been with the Secretary trying to go out to every single park in the state. I haven't been getting out to any of them, but I keep telling the Secretary, hopefully, I'd like to get out. I'm getting a little stir-crazy myself. So thank you for the great work. We're breaking records at all of our parks, and I'm hoping that people still get out and take advantage of it in the off-season when it's not spring or summer. So thank you, Madam Secretary. Any other questions on DNR, or is there a motion?
Move approval.
Very good. Thank you. 3-0.
Thank you.
We're going to now move to the university system agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. We have 4 items for your consideration this morning, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Good morning. Any questions for university? Motion?
I have a question. Let me just see what it was. Because I may be wrong. I guess it was the same question, Tom, that I asked of DHCD, which is three CP, the UNBC building project, includes features, good features, environmentally strong features, energy maximization features. But could you all start specifically addressing how it impacts the campus's goals and plans to reach carbon neutrality? Because I know the campuses that we had plans, but sometimes it's very hard to see how a project fits in.
Sure, certainly.
Thank you. That was my only question about it. And 4, as I understand it, the Frostburg project, obviously there are employees who are concerned because of employee actions, but this project itself, as I understand it, comes from bond funds which are previously authorized and limited to this use, and auxiliary funds which are also limited to this use.
That is correct.
And I hope Frostburg will work closely in the face of very serious budget cuts to make sure they take care of the employees who work so hard for them there.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
If appropriate, I would move approval.
Second.
Very good. 3-0. Now we're going to go to Secretary Slater, Department of Transportation.
Good morning. Great to see everyone. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 16 items for your consideration today. Items 1, GM mod, and 2, GM mod are being withdrawn, leaving 13 items for your consideration. We are here to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for the Secretary? Very good. A motion on transportation?
Would move approval.
3-0. We're on a roll. Hopefully we don't screw it up with Secretary Churchill. We're going to move on to the Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Maryland Department of General Services. Today we are presenting 29 items for your consideration. We are withdrawing item 20, and we have representatives available to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any questions on DGS agenda?
Governor, I would like to compliment you on item 6, which is a $2 million grant from your administration for the revitalization of Baltimore City's historic Lexington Market, a charm city institution that has been around since, get this, this can't be right, 1782? Wow. Okay. I thought it was old, and I used to love going up there when I could do that. But, you know, I had crab cakes last night because I'm the person charged with actually frying up the lump crab cakes that we bought very expensively from Whole Foods. But I see that hopefully Fadley's is open and can actually, if I do it over the internet, perhaps order crab cakes from Lexington Market. Is that possible?
I think it is possible. That's a great suggestion. Instead of you going to, you know, Whole Foods, we always support local Maryland businesses.
Could I condition my vote on $2 million as to whether I'm able to get some pay for, obviously, fabulous crab cakes? But anyway, I'll just...
I think that might be inappropriate if the crab cakes were over $20. It might not... You get a chance to
ethics. Yeah, I don't want free tech crab cakes. I would like to order them because I know they're such high quality. And I guess everybody now is doing remote sales, so why not? Maybe it is possible.
We have trucks, too, near, I think not far from you, Comptroller, who bring up fish and crab from around Maryland and Virginia.
Yeah, no, that may be, but Lexington Market and Fadley's are nationally known. So, this is a good grant. Well done, and congratulations. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Maybe get some of that craft beer to go with those craft cakes. While you're sitting down with Linda Lamone. Any other questions on DGS? Is there a motion?
I have a question. Not a 16S mod, the State Police Forensic Biology Casework Sample Analysis. Could you ask somebody, it doesn't need a long call, but how bad the backup of untested sexual assault kits is now? We used to get reports and...
I think we'll ask that question of the state police and get back with you.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, item 21, IT mod.
Depending on your question, Mr. Comptroller, we have several representatives from the Department of Labor, including Secretary Robinson.
Yes, I definitely want to ask Secretary Robinson, and I do this in my spirit of forgiveness and working together, but I get literally dozens, if not hundreds, of folks who end up, for some reason, on the doorstep of the comptroller's office electronically. They're sending me emails that it is just a unbelievable traffic jam in these unemployment claims. This is not our issue, obviously. And I know that there's been a lot of stress on it, that you've processed 745,000 claims and paid out over $7.7 billion in state federal benefits to over 636,000 claimants. I'm not suggesting that you're not working overtime and attempting to do the best with a obviously always changing federal environment. But I guess, Madam Secretary, I'm just to be candid, I'm pretty frustrated that people find it necessary to send us desperate little messages every day pleading for help to file a claim, check their status, or even speak with a representative. And some of these folks have been waiting for months. Some of them, obviously, every one of them needs immediate customer service. And I believe they're being told when they finally get through on the phone to a real person that they must wait 8 to 12 weeks for an interview. And they've already waited months since filing a claim. And I quote, apparently your staff is saying this is a Beacon issue, not a labor issue, that they'll need to contact Beacon support instead. So I would urge you just to come up with a different customer service response because if I ever did that in my agency, I'd be an ex-comptroller pretty quickly because it's just not acceptable. It's my understanding the board we have approved over $34 million in spending for the Department of Labor specifically in support of activities of the Division of Unemployment Insurance, including up to $1 million to procure 692 laptops, $22.3 million for a virtual call center, and $5.2 million in modifications to the state's unemployment system. I guess my issue isn't with the vendors who we're contracted with. I think it's actually with the customer service climate over at your agency. I just want to make sure you are absolutely as aggressive as possible in making sure that, somebody picks up the phone and somebody is sympathetic and somebody does not say to someone who's been waiting for months, you need to go and find some person over at Beacon. And so what exactly is going on, I guess, and how can my colleagues and I help to ensure that you have the adequate resources, I guess, to do the job? Not suggesting the governor has not paid attention to this. I know he has. But it seems to be an ongoing problem.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. Good morning, Governor and Madam Treasurer. For the record, Tiffany Robbins, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Labor. And you're right, Mr. Comptroller. I brief the governor quite often. He has been extremely on top of this issue and has asked a lot of the same questions of me that you have asked. So I will just kind of give you a little bit of background as to what we are doing. First of all, no customer should ever receive feedback that they need to contact Beacon or our vendor. These are our Department of Labor unemployment insurance customers, and they're working very hard to write a chart. My team is working 7 days. So we have trained and hired almost 100 additional state employees. We have trained and hired borrowed employees from agencies. Sorry, I'm getting really back.
Can you hold up for 1 second because we're having a sound problem? I don't know if anybody can fix that, but you're echoing and we're not getting all of what you're saying. I don't know if that's on our IT end or something to do with your computer, but I want to make sure we can hear you.
Sure. John, I called in during the test, and we didn't have that problem. Sounds a little better now. Is that better?
Yes.
Right. So what I was explaining was we did already contract with a vendor to add 275 additional call center agents because we knew we needed more people answering the phone. We have since trained some of the new state employees to act in our call center and resolve issues for claimants as well. We've actually doubled the size of the unemployment insurance division from about 400 to 800. But what I'm pleased to tell you today is that we are in the process of actually tripling the size of the division to handle this crisis. It really doesn't match the 5,000% increase in volume that we have seen. So we're still going to be working hard. But while we have worked to stand up the CARES Act programs and dealt with rampant fraud, which is happening across the nation, and it continues, and we stood up the FEMA Lost Wages Assistance Program and got all 6 weeks of that funding out, applied for programs administered more quickly than most other states in the nation, we do see that with the launch of our new Beacon 2.0 system, even though claimants have access to more information about their eligibility status in the system, they have decided to even pick up the phone and call us more because they have questions. We send out user guides and direct emails. But we know we need our own team available to handle our customers' concerns. So in addition to modifying and expanding the call center contract by an additional 300 agents, bringing that to a total of 575, we actually put out a competitive RFP for adjudicators. That closed last week. And we will be making an award probably today to bring on board anywhere from 100 to 500 adjudication staff. That is the most complex job in our division because those employees require either legal experience, investigative experience, insurance experience. They're the ones dealing with these pending claims that are the most complex. They have a dispute pending from either one employer or multiple employers during the claimant's 18-month base period. And those claims, like any insurance program, require an investigator to conduct interviews with both parties, collect documents, and make a determination. It has been difficult during this pandemic to get all of that scheduled, to get in touch with businesses, to get in touch with claimants. We've added phone lines and expanded our interactive voice response system, but we know there's more work to be done. And in terms of customer relationship management, I'm also pleased to tell you that just in the past week, we have implemented a new Salesforce tool that allows us to have our customers submit an inquiry form where they immediately get feedback with a claimant identifier so that all communications regarding their claim from any agent or any office is all consolidated into one place. That's very helpful because, as you probably know, many of our customers are not only reaching out to our staff, but they're reaching out to you and to the governor and to their legislator, and we end up duplicating efforts by multiple people working on the same claim. This consolidates everything into one place. It gives direct feedback and access to that information and all notes in their file directly to the claimant. So I hope that you will start to see some relief in the coming weeks as we add this additional staffing and work through these new tools and get our customers used to it. But I can assure you that we are on top of it.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. And, I offer this in a kind of collaborative way to see what we can do to improve the situation. This email was received on October 27th, just last week at 1:32, and I'll just read it quickly because it kind of summarizes what I'm concerned about. Hello, my name is Michelle, and we blanked out the last name. I'm emailing you, the comptroller, because I've reached the end of any hope. I'm a single mother of two. I can't work because my kids have nowhere to go right now because of the pandemic. I've been on hold with unemployment weeks now, and the only thing they can tell me is that I'm waiting for an interview. I don't think there's anything you can do, me, but I figured I would try since this was the advice I was given. Thank you for your time. My staff has frankly cracked the code over there and has found a couple of your staff who are they can communicate with and move something like this along. But I'm concerned that we're treating this like some kind of court administrative hearing where people have to do this and do that. I mean, can't we err on the side of relief? And if we have to do some clawback, I just hate to think of these folks being told you have to wait for an interview when the interview takes forever. And maybe there's some way that you guys can creatively. We often put people on payment plans that we have to go back and examine because we have been very generous. But why not put people on unemployment and continue to do the investigation? You can always claw back some of the payments. But I hate the idea that, we're fighting fraud by, bad customer service. And is it really 8 weeks or something until people can get an interview? 8 to 12 weeks?
Depending on the complexity of the claim, Mr. Comptroller, there are some waiting 3 to 6 months.
Please, I don't know what you can do. Obviously, it calls for a little bit of flexibility. But 12 weeks is just, look at this woman. Santa, here's the email. We get dozens of these. And we're happy to try to, crack the code for them. But if it's just an impossible mountain of 8 to 12 weeks and they have to do it as if we're in normal times and, we have to get the consent now because I understand the small businesses people, they don't want to have their unemployment claims go up by saying, yeah, the person is really unemployed. So there's a whole built-in incentive there for, I think, a real amount of congestion. It's there, and I'm just wondering if you can perhaps come up with a creative relief valve. So that we're not going to hear about this. It just kills me to read these emails, and it's not your fault. I'm just saying there's got to be a way around it without getting us in all sorts of legal trouble.
Understood. I both me and myself as well, to be hearing some of these stories. But what I will say is that we have relaxed four waves. Every single regulatory or statutory measure that we have legal authority to do at this point. Maryland is a mitigation state. We're one of only four. We're not a pay or deny state. That means us and three other states in the country are required to mitigate the disputes on every single claim. If a claimant, for example, if the employer reports that the claimant voluntarily quit the job, or if they were fired for misconduct, in other states, those claims can be denied, and those claims immediately have the right to appeal. In Maryland, our state law requires us to conduct these in-depth interviews and investigations to find out if there was any contributory negligence or action on the part of the employer that would allow that claimant to receive full or partial benefits. It makes my job a little bit harder, but we are following Maryland and state law. As you know, unemployment programs are funded by USDOL primarily, so we have to remain in conformity with federal law as well, and we're already starting to see some of those audits. That, all of that being said, I completely understand and agree with all the points you've made, and I do believe that the staffing increases and these contracts that we are entering into, literally as I speak today, are going to provide that relief and help us to conduct all of the interviews in a much more timely manner in the coming weeks.
Are there any other jurisdictions that are doing any, like a reinsurance program or any things to allow you to do what you have to do but take care of people like the woman who wrote the comptroller, you know, 3 months, that's a long time not to have anything coming in.
Well, she's been waiting 2 months, and now she's told it's 8 to 12 weeks for an interview.
4 months.
To call Beacon. I'm not suggesting you should break the law, Madam Secretary. I'm just suggesting you come up with some kind of innovative way around this, because the system we have in a pandemic is subject to abuse, because as soon as someone objects, then everything gets tossed into a completely bureaucratic investigation, et cetera. I understand all that in normal times. These are not normal times. And please try to, I don't know whether there's another state, whether the governor has something under his emergency order or what. I guess other than hiring new people, what you're saying is you're just trapped in a kind of Kafka-like system, you know.
In these systems.
So break out of it if you can, and I'm happy to support you. I'm sure the governor would be, because it's just way too Kafka-like, you know, go and wait in the room for a long time. And these are people that have already waited. I'm not suggesting that it's a panacea for abuse and fraud. Maybe there is some. But, hey, guess what? There's abuse and fraud everywhere. You know, $1.5 million was given by PhDs and others in Montgomery County to scam artists who called up pretending they were Montgomery County police officers. That goes on all the time. I'm sorry. I wish it didn't. I wish they would be arrested and put in jail, the scam artists. But they're, you know, it's not the end of the world if we're able to get relief to a large number of people that are not abusing the system and may be reported erroneously by their small business, because maybe they had a personal grievance, and the small business owner says, "Oh no, that person quit. I didn't fire them." Well, goodness gracious, that can go on forever. I don't mind catching up with it in a rearview mirror, but in the interim, could we please assume that the fraud is we're able to handle it, even if there is a small amount of it and people are suffering? I don't know. I it's not my bailiwick, but count me in if I can help you on the call centers or some other aspect, because the right now the optics are bad.
Understood. And I will say I'm doing my very best to maintain the integrity of this program, because we do have actually a lot of fraud. I'm on a call every week with my counterparts across the country. Every state is dealing with the same problem. We did save taxpayers over $500 million by catching a group of claims using stolen identities back in July, and that has been ongoing. So we have new triggers in our system and software that is doing a lot of it, but then it takes some manual intervention to review the documents that are being uploaded to verify identity. That is part of what takes away, you know, time from us getting through the backlog on all of these interviews, which is why we're bringing on all the extra people to get this work done. To the treasurer's initial question about what other states are doing or has anybody come up with a better way, there was one state that just automatically made $1,200 payments to every claimant, and then they got their hands clasped by federal government, and they're under an audit, and they're having to work really hard with separating a team to claw back a lot of that money that ended up, you know, shouldn't have gone out or wasn't to claimants that wasn't eligible. So we are brainstorming every single day. I want all of you to know that if you have suggestions, I will listen. We do talk to other states. We're talking to our federal partners about things we can do, but I do think that this added staffing and our Salesforce tool is going to help us get through that backlog. And obviously, I tell all of our stakeholders, Mr. Comptroller, for example, the claimant that emailed you, we are working from oldest to newest, of course, so that these people that have been waiting the longest can get their interviews and their benefits as quickly as possible. But if you have a priority case where someone has children or has a disability, we absolutely will take that and get it handled very quickly. So please feel free to forward me those messages and we'll take care of them.
Well, look, let me just conclude by saying it's going to get a lot worse, because the virus is coming back with a vengeance. There's no doubt about it. And if Joe Biden is not the president, then we're really in hot water here as far as unemployment down the road. And God knows what happens with the second stimulus. But I would hope, you know, we do fraud detection all the time at the comptroller's office. Our algorithms are able to detect fraud 99 out of 100 times. It used to be a lot less accurate. So maybe you need some new fraud detection algorithms, because the fraud can be protected and put off to the side. That is not an issue in our office right now, because, you know, the filter is so fine that it catches all the fraud before we send the refund back. But what we're not doing is holding up legitimate people that have had their, you know, financial identity stolen, et cetera, et cetera. When there's a real person there, not a fraudster out in Southern California or in, you know, Ukraine or something, once we identify that there's a real person there, then we can be lenient and get them their refund. And if there's a problem and there's with their tax return, we can obviously look at it and go back to them if we really think there was something abusive. But right now, I just shudder to think of what's going to happen this winter, what's going to happen to your somewhat overworked infrastructure, and anything we can do to resolve it. But, you know, don't hang your hat on this fraud detection stuff, because all your staff has to do is identify, is there a real Maryland person here? And that's pretty easy to do.
Mr. Comptroller, you will be seeing a procurement in the coming weeks coming through for a contract for expanded fraud software and mechanisms so that we can increase those abilities. But I will tell you that at this point, the bad actors are pretty bold in that they are using stolen identities. When I say it's ongoing, yesterday morning, starting at 3 a.m., we had a handful of IP addresses hitting our system, each with tens of thousands of claims trying to be filed. Fortunately, our system technology blocks all of it, but they use usernames like JJohnson1, JJohnson2, JJohnson3. They all have real social security numbers, real addresses. That makes it very hard. And in light of, you know, making sure it's a real person, what our system does, this level of fraud was blocked at the outset.
Okay.
But anyone that works through...
Let me just suggest, I know it's a difficult thing to do, but I'm going to send over David Hildebrand. He's a fabulous guy, wonderful state employee. I'm not even sure if he wears shoes to work. He's like totally into this fraud detection. He's an expert at it. He's probably the country's top person, and he's designed this incredible system for us. Maybe he could help your folks on an interim, temporary basis as far as doing something that would allow you to have more flexibility here. That's all I'm suggesting, I guess. Governor, I've gone on too long here, but thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Secretary, and Mr. Comptroller, these are the discussions we've been having every day since March. I can tell you that the U.S. Department of Labor thinks we did the best job in America on stopping fraud. We identified right away $500 million. Other states have lost billions of dollars in total. I think several hundred million dollars New Jersey already lost, but they can't get back. We haven't. And 90-some percent of the ones that they flag for fraud are actually fraud with stolen identities. The other folks, the ones that you and I are both hearing from every day, 41,000 of them by state and federal law, we cannot pay them. Other states are just denying them and giving them an answer, but Maryland law, one of three states, says we can't do that. So it does take months to – it's almost a judicial process that they have to file a law, and they have – if an employer says, no, I want them to come back to work, I didn't fire them, we cannot pay them. And so I there are only 615 claims in the whole state that are being evaluated for other issues. The 41,747.
Let me ask, Governor, why?
The 41,000 are ones that we cannot pay by law.
Yeah, but what's the problem with how, if we need to have a hearing for the 615, why don't we have a hearing? Not only 615 people, and they're being told it's 8 to 12 weeks.
There's 41,000 that are complaining about not getting paid, and that's because they don't have the documentation. There's a dispute with the employer, or the federal or state law will require that process. And 41,000 hearings is a long time. Just keep in mind, California has 1.4 million unresolved cases. Virginia has three or four times more than we do. We, as bad as it is, and I feel for every person that's contacting all of us, I think, we were the first state in the country to put a website together. Some people turned off their phones altogether. We hired hundreds of people and added phone lines. And I would say, by any metric, we're doing better than almost any state in America.
Yeah, but that's not good enough.
No, I agree. If we have one person that's not happy, it's not good enough.
Thank you.
Governor, one last question. Are there things that you are constrained from doing because it's part of the federal system that you think would be helpful if the state could do it?
I mean, we may consider changing the state law so that we're not one of three states that has these constraints and slows everything down. I don't know that we can change the federal law. I asked the secretary if she'd be willing to go to federal prison by paying everybody, and she said no, she wasn't willing to go that far.
But if there are any backup programs that would be safe, that we could have pending resolution of the federal decisions in the federal program.
We as she mentioned earlier, all the hundreds of people that we've hired and all the additional money, all the contracts that we've approved here, we, in addition, we put another $20 million into unemployment last week to help with the layoff aversion fund, which has been helpful. We doubled it, tripled it, and we've put more money into her budget so that she can do every single thing that any of us can think of.
So you've done
this result. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions on DGS?
Yeah, so you could just keep me in the loop on this because obviously it's something that needs
absolutely. Thank you.
And I did have a comment about the Burtis House property in the city of Annapolis. This is something that was a long, speak about Burtis, it's a burr under the saddle of a lot of people in the Annapolis area, and I just wanted to thank you, Governor, and for the collaborative effort for transferring the Burtis House into the whole proposed revitalization of Annapolis City Dock. I think it's obviously very important, and my hat is off to Mayor Devin Buckley and others who have fought their way through all of this, and I take it that your folks helped Governor resolve who should have control of this historic edifice down at the dock, and I guess it's Department of Natural Resources, but it's a DGS item, number 25, and it's congratulations.
I didn't think it was solvable, but you guys did it.
Yeah, thank you. It was difficult. Any other questions on DGS?
Governor, before moving on to any agenda approval, I neglected to mention for the board that our agenda also includes four supplemental items, items 30 through 33. So I just wanted to make that formal introduction. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0 on DGS. Thank you, everybody. Now we can go count the rest of the votes, I guess, see what's going on. Thank you.
Okay.